This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. When it comes to generations, we hear about baby boomers and millennials, but what about the generation in between? Gen X. President of the Generational Imperative, Chuck Underwood, is going to join me to speak about that lost generation, Generation X. Thanks for joining me, Chuck.
It is my pleasure, Mason.
Tell me, Chuck, what exactly is a generation?
A generation is an age group. An age cohort is the fancy word, that throughout its adulthood shares similar core values. Because back during their formative years, which are roughly the first 20 years of our life, that age group shared the same times and teachings. And because of that, they tended to mold the same core values, and those core values make them a generation. And any time in American life, the times or teachings change. It means young kids coming of age are going to mold different core values and become our next generation. And at the moment, we have five living generations of Americans.
Who decides when a generation begins and when it ends?
Well, people like me. There are about a half dozen of us who created the field of generational study, and we labored with it for a couple of decades, but finally pinned it down enough that the information is now trustworthy. And that's really important because American business uses generational strategies. So does American government and education and religion. And people who hear training programs that we present also take the generational information home to their living rooms because this stuff has an enormous impact on our interpersonal relations with friends and relatives and others.
When it comes to these studies and a group of people like you, who decides exactly which one's correct? Because going with millennials, some say millennials start in the early 80s and some say millennials start in the mid 80s. Which one's right?
Well, first of all, you're right. There is some very bad and inaccurate generational content floating around out there. And that is because in the decade of the 2000s, this topic became white hot, and the handful of us who created it were living out of airplanes because everybody wanted to learn it. So we were speaking and giving training sessions to every conceivable type of organization. Other people jumped into it, and when it became a cluttered field and some people needed to somehow make a name for themselves, they started either creating generations that did not exist and do not exist, or they came up with false research that said this generation was actually born during these years. So there's a lot of clutter out there right now. And regrettably, when I speak to audiences, I have to waste a small chunk of my presentation correcting those mistakes that are out there.
Okay, so officially, what are the names of the five living generations?
From oldest to youngest, the oldest generation in America is the GI generation, which NBC newsman Tom Brokaw immortalized in his book as the greatest generation. This year, the GIs are age 92 and older, and there aren't many left, but they're the generation that saved the world in World War II and then came home and built the greatest nation on the planet. The silent generation this year is age 73 to 91. The baby boomers this year are age 54 to 72. Generation X this year is age 37 to 53. The millennial generation is age 18 to 36. And it appears that our next generation in the next couple of years will clearly arrive, and we do not become a member of a generation until we leave high school, or if we're fortunate enough to go to college, until we leave college. The classroom years are the formative years when we are free to try on different core values. We keep some, we throw others away, and by the time we've gone through that sorting process during our school years and then get into into adulthood, we will finally possess a set of core values that will determine which generation we belong to.
With all this information, how do businesses, governments, you know, educational, how do they use this information? Like, what could they possibly gain from knowing so much about particular generations as a group?
Most generational strategies fit under a couple of really big umbrellas. Generational marketplace strategies, and under that there are a lot of sub-strategies. And the other big umbrella is the hot one right now, generational workforce management strategies. So employers in America want to be trained in generational workforce strategies so they can recruit the best employees from each generation, onboard them smoothly in those first few hours, days, and weeks, manage them effectively, and by doing all of that, retain them. Generational marketplace strategies apply to a lot, but basically it's how do we conduct upfront consumer research to find out what different generations like? How do we then create products for specific generations? How do we sell and market those? And how do we provide customer service after the sale? So government and business and higher education and religion use it in a variety of ways. Higher education wants to recruit students to its campuses. They want to provide the best courses, and so they use generational research to do that. And government leaders use it so that they can most effectively serve the unique needs of all of the generations that they're elected to serve.
I am a millennial. I'm not a Gen Xer, but I have noticed that when it comes to news reports, when it comes to a lot of data out there, it seems to be baby boomer and millennial centric. And I was just curious, why is it that Gen Xers are slightly overlooked?
You're absolutely right, and you can actually enlarge that a bit. Gen X is extremely overlooked, underappreciated, by far the most misunderstood of the generations. They are sensitive. They are smart. In the workplace, like any generation, they have some excellent strengths, but they also have some workplace weaknesses. In the marketplace, Gen X has been overlooked because they're a small generation. For every 8 baby boomers born, or for every 8 millennials born, there have only been 6 Gen Xers.
Wow.
So the marketplace tends to go where all of the warm bodies are. And the baby boomers and millennials also have been noise-making generations. The baby boomers launched a long list of social revolutions in their early adulthood, the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the war protest movement, the environmental movement, the drug revolution, the religion revolution, the sexual revolution. So the baby boomers are always sort of front-page news. The millennials have come up the same way. They were the generation that protested against our war against terrorism, and the times and teachings of their youth made them socially active. Gen X is an island generation. They had a childhood passage like no other. They are much less plugged in to American life and American activism than the two generations that flanked them. So they've been overlooked by the news media, by Hollywood, by just about everybody.
You're right about Hollywood, too, because I remember growing up and it kind of felt like movies went from cowboys to just futuristic real fast. Like, what happened to the Gen Xers?
I was just going to say, I know where you're going, and you're absolutely right. Gen X simply was overlooked. It's so easy to do a movie about the generations that made some real noise in their life. After World War II, which our GI generation one with our allies around the world. In the 1950s and even the 60s, there were a blizzard of GI generation-centric Hollywood films. Well, then come the boomers with all of those revolutions. Music changed, life changed, television changed, and it was very easy to find fascinating movie content for that generation. But then Generation X became kind of a dropout generation. They're very self-reliant and independent and individualistic. They're not a joiner generation. So Gen Xers just don't show up as much on American radar anywhere. And it's been easy to overlook them. What the Gen X movies that have come out have a constant theme of cynicism and dropout. If you think of the television show Friends, that is the classic Gen X television show. Your life's a joke, you're broke. That's the theme song lyrics.
Yeah, you're right. You said that Generation X is not a joiner generation, but in your book, you call it the family first generation. Why'd you do that?
Well, the first part of it, the joiner generation, a whole bunch of membership organizations in this country are struggling horribly right now because Gen X didn't join. First of all, Gen Xers are not joiners in religion. So our nation's religions are hurting for membership and participation. Gen Xers in their professional lives have been less of a joiner generation than boomers and millennials in trade associations. Gen X attorneys don't join the local bar association. Gen Xers in advertising don't join the local advertising club, and they don't join civic clubs like the Rotary Club, the Kiwanis Club, the Lions Club. They don't, as veterans, join any veterans groups. And yes, first of all, there are exceptions, but we're talking about generations moving the needle in America. So they've been kind of dropouts in that sort of thing. But because they grew up when the divorce rate in America was skyrocketing, they entered adulthood with a very strong generational core value of, I'm going to be there for my kid. And as parents, Gen Xers have led a national movement to re-strengthen and rebuild the American family unit, which took a horrible beating in their childhood, and they were the victims of that beating. Their parents were the ones whose moms finally broke through the barrier and were able to have full-time careers. They were the parents, though, who also divorced. So many, many Gen X kids grew up with either divorced parents or time-starved, dual-career, absentee parents. And they suffered the consequences of that. So in adulthood, as parents themselves, they've done an extraordinary job of saying, I'm going to be there for my kid. And that has been their generation's life. They're going to take care of family.
I've noticed that with Gen Xers, when they were growing up as children in the 80s, toy companies ended up marketing towards boys specifically or girls specifically. And that marketing trend kind of continued on where they would do things for boys or they would do things for girls. Did that affect them as they grew up?
There is an enormous gender difference and gender dynamic in Gen X that is very unique. Generation X grew up beyond its control during the era of the surging female in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Those decades were the first years of the women's movement. So Gen X girls came of age seeing women up there in the adult world soaring in every conceivable category. Gen X boys went the other direction, beyond their control. For example, when mom and dad divorced, then child custody courts awarded child custody almost exclusively to the moms, not to the dads. What that meant for a Gen X brother and sister is this. They came of age seeing a woman in charge of the household. Well, that was very good for the Gen X daughter. But the Gen X boy only saw his divorced father maybe every other weekend, if that. Not only that, in the early 70s, just as Gen Xers are beginning their classroom passage, an informal movement in this country to enhance girls' education began. It was called the Girl Project, and Gen X girls became the first in American history to surpass the boys of their generation in classroom performance. Well, the mass media celebrated the girls, overlooked the boys, and so the toy makers and all of the other marketers in this country decided to feed the part of that generation that was feeling good about itself and excited about life. And so in many, many ways, the girls of Gen X grew up treated especially differently from the boys.
One of the things I've read in your book was that Gen Xers don't trust. They don't trust media. They don't trust big businesses. They definitely don't trust governments. Where did that mistrust come from?
In 1973, the oldest Gen Xers are turning 8. And their parents tell them one night, the vice president of our nation just resigned in disgrace, Spiro Agnew. 1 year later, As those Xers turn 9, their parents tell them one night, "The president of our nation just resigned in disgrace." 1 year later, 1975, the first Xers are now 10. They see their government quit a war in Vietnam for mishandling it. Throughout the rest of the 70s, they'll see the Iran-Contra scandal. They'll see the failure of their government to rescue American hostages held by terrorists in Iran, where baby boomers had watched on television as man landed on the moon. Gen Xers grew up seeing not one, but two space shuttles explode. Boomers grew up with American presidents as honorable, trustworthy heroes. Gen Xers come of age with the Bill Clinton sex scandal with Monica Lewinsky. It goes on and on and on, but beyond their control, the Gen X formative years saw our nation's leaders and heroes in business and government and sport and religion lie and cheat and fail to deliver on their promise. So when the Xers pop into adulthood, they are very distrustful of major institutions, generally distrustful of older people, and their formative years times are the reason why.
Is this why marketers and commercials and products seem to just skip a generation, because they messed up so badly with Gen Xers that they're like, we're just going to jump to millennials?
Well, the millennials, first of all, yes. The reason that the mass media jumped to the millennials is this. Newspapers still doing a wonderful job of reporting the best obtainable version of the truth. I am a big fan of the integrity of newspapers. But newspapers missed with Generation X, because when Generation X reached adulthood and newspaper subscription time, Gen Xers didn't care about the main section of the newspaper, which was all about government and big business. And when Gen Xers had been growing up, government and big business had been lying and cheating and failing to deliver on their promises. They didn't care. So the newspapers suddenly lost readers. And what that meant was they could not fail with the next generation, which would be the millennials. And so newspapers turned their attention to the millennials to get them. And that means if you look in the Chicago Tribune or any other newspaper on just about any day, you will see a headline that includes the word millennials. You will see very, very few headlines, and this has been the case now for 30 years, about Generation X. Same with television. Millennials are more numerous. Gen Xers were the first computer generation. The boys of Gen X, for the most part, would rather game than they would watch television. So digital technology has pursued them, but not the traditional mass media.
It's funny, as a child, I remember headlines of Generation X being like slackers. They were lazy. They were a bunch of deadbeats, yuppies. So it's kind of funny, you know, as an adult, I started to wonder, where are all the Gen Xers at? What are they like in the workplace?
Because of the most difficult childhood in U.S. history, Generation X understandably entered adulthood with an awful lot of negative baggage. They got off to a bad start with employers when they were in their 20s. This was the generation that said, "My mom and dad were workaholics. I'm coming in at 8 and I'm leaving exactly at 5, even though there might be another hour's work that I really do need to do today for the good of the company." They refused promotions or transfers to other cities. They just drew a hard line that employees from past generations had never done. And that's when my phone started ringing and employers were saying, "Come in and teach us about Generation X. We can't figure them out. They're slackers. They're in it for themselves." During the interview, Gen Xers will not simply answer the questions we ask them. They will also be very demanding of us, and they'll ask, "What is your company going to do for me?" Well, that was all new for employers. Now today, Gen Xers, again age 37 through 53, have kind of found their footing. They're good employees. They are still beyond their control, scarred by the times and teachings of their formative years and by their own core values. Right now, a big training program that I'm asked to give is Gen X Leadership Training, because Generation X is leading organizations very uniquely. As one example, because they are so independent and self-reliant, now as the presidents of the companies, they're not very good at asking other people for help when they're confused and don't know the answer themselves. So Gen X just had that extraordinary passage. It started badly. They're now good, solid workers. They now understand that they need to think about the company, not just themselves. So now they are more willing to go the extra mile. But they still don't want work to intrude on their family life, and they still want to be there for their kids.
Now, with all of these generalities about Generation X, does this translate across all races, African Americans, Mexicans?
Within each generation, there are differences with ethnicities, with other demographic factors, if you grew up in a very poor household or a very rich household, for example, and there are some geographic differences. Did that Gen Xer, did any generation's member, grow up in the mountains of Appalachia or Beverly Hills, California, or in the flatlands of Montana? And I've had to travel constantly now for a long time, and that gives me the chance to ask the question after I present a training program or a keynote speech. I'll say, you tell me, is this accurate for this market? And as one example, I spoke in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is heavily Mormon, and one of the feedbacks they gave me was this. Here in Utah, our Gen Xers did not suffer divorced parents in as high numbers as the rest of the country did because of our Mormon religion. But other than that, they're pretty much the same.
That's actually pretty cool. Now, when it comes to your book, and I actually really like the way it's structured, you can actually just jump from generation to generation. So if you only wanted to know about baby boomers, you can jump to every chapter about baby boomers. The same thing with Gen X and millennials. I'm curious, does this stuff translate to other countries, or is it just U.S.-centric?
Very good question. The answer generally is no, with one exception. Generations tend to be very nation-specific, and although other countries use our names because we were the first to create the field of generational study, England's baby boomers or Gen Xers or your millennials, Mason, are not the same in England as in America. Yes, they are to some point. Pop culture tends to go worldwide, but the core values are different because in England, the millennials grew up with different government, different religion, different education, and in some instances, different family structure. And those really are the building blocks of a generation. However, the book that you read is accurate in the States, and I've found that it's about 85% accurate in English-speaking Canada. Not French-speaking, but English-speaking, and that's it. Not Australia, not France, not Japan. The formative years, times, and teachings of their various generations are different. You say you're a millennial. Imagine someone your age having spent the first 20 years or 30 years of her life in Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria. Very, very different formative years, times, and teachings, and so very different core values. And core values are the very essence of generations.
You said it was English-speaking areas in Canada. What about Mexico? Since it's right next to us, wouldn't they share some things similar?
Good question, and the answer is basically no. Mexico has a very, very different lifestyle than America. Government, different. Education, different. Family unit, different. Religion, different. So no, as close as they are, we are dramatically different. One quick example, and it's a superficial example, but it hopefully will make the point. To an American family, food is something that you consume. It's fuel. To Mexicans, dining is an experience. Food is an experience, and not just the experience of tasting the food, but it is a family experience. And this shows up in marketing and advertising. If you are a food producer or if you are a supermarket chain, you advertise much differently in Mexico than you do in America.
I I like that one. That was a good one. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, thank you. And first of all, thank you for reading the book. You are more prepared for this conversation than any other I've had on radio. And I want you to know I appreciate you've done your homework. The answer to your question, the website is genimperative.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.